On.
Mine's on.
Thank you. All right. We'll come back to order. The time is about 1:34 p.m. Central Time, and at this time we're going to proceed with the staff advocacy case. And Mr. Norell, please identify your witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. Staff at this point is going to call Mr. Dante Mugrace to the stand to testify to PSC Exhibit Number 4.
All right. And do you have a witness opening statement?
We do, but can we swear the witness in, and then we've got some corrections to that exhibit.
All right. And Mr. Mugrace, you've been present and heard me instruct as to penalties for perjury, have you not?
Yes.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under the pains and penalties of perjury?
I do.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Norell.
Thank you. And Dante, could just for the record, how do you prefer your last name be pronounced?
Mugrace.
Mugrace? Okay. Thank you. And you had indicated, or are there any corrections to PSC Exhibit 4, which is your testimony and exhibits?
Yes, they are.
And what would those be?
Page 31 of my testimony, line 13, regarding the recommendations of the company's proposed SO2 allowance credit of $87,000. I incorrectly amortized it over a three-year period when I should have not, so I am agreeing with the company at the beginning balance of the SO2 allowance credit of $87,000 is appropriate.
And then I would also like the record to reflect that late Friday evening, we noticed there were some trade secret materials provided in the filed Exhibit 4, the pre-filed Exhibit 4. We have removed those from commissioners' packets that they've got in front of them, and we do have corrections here that we will submit with the original. We are taking out the trade secret information and putting the public information in instead.
All right. Thank you. And witness opening statement, have you labeled that PSC Exhibit 20?
I have 19, but it could be...
19 was Mr. Pavlovich's opening statement.
Okay. I apologize, then. This will need to be 20, and I will need to mark these correctly.
All right. And by stipulation, prior agreement, the opening statement is admitted into the record as Exhibit 20.
Just a minute, please, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'd like to pass this out as exhibit.
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Mr. Mugrace, if you'd please read your opening statement for the record.
Sure. My name is Dante Mugrace. I am a senior consultant with the economic and management consulting firm of Snavely, King, Majoris & Associates, Inc. Our office is located in Landover, Maryland. I am appearing on behalf of the advocacy staff of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. I have provided testimony with respect to the company, Northern States Power Company's revenue requirement for its electric service operations in North Dakota. My approach in calculating the recommended revenue requirement is based upon the use of a three-year historical average, 2010, 2011, and 2012, for the company's other operating revenues and its operating expenses. The use of a three-year average provides for a normalized level of its other operating revenues, which takes into consideration the variations and fluctuations occurring year to year and the operating cycle to operating cycle, providing for a smoothening of other operating revenues going forward. A normalized level of operating expenses, which takes into consideration the variations and fluctuations occurring year to year and operating cycle to operating cycle, and provides for a smoothening of expenses going forward. The results of a three-year historical average approach provides the basis to set a foundational level related to the company's other operating revenues and operating expenses instead of the company's 2013 fully forecasted test year approach for its financial data. The main factor for the use of a three-year historical average is that the company does not produce interim or semi-annual financial statements. It is therefore difficult to test whether the company's projections are comparable and reliable with known actual results. I have also taken into consideration and made recommendations regarding the company's forecasted and individual 2013 adjustments to its other operating revenues and its operating expenses. For the setting of the company's retail operating revenues, I relied on the company's public notice Schedule 2, which the company has projected total megawatt sales of 2.27 million megawatt sales. Based upon the company's data requests in 5-025, which shows 5 months of usage as of May 2013, and annualized, it shows 2.4 million megawatts. So it's clear that the megawatt sales have increased since the company filed its rate proceeding in December 2012. I have used a percentage factor and applied the 2,270,000, which was in the notice, and factored in a 1.54% increase, as described in my testimony, to set projected megawatt sales in 2013, along with an historical average of 3 years of kilowatt costs at about 7.68 cents, to compute my recommended sales revenue of $177 million. My approach to the company's proposed rate base is the use of the company as filed 2011 earnings report for the North Dakota jurisdiction, which shows the plant in service average balance. I have taken into account the company's various proposed and forecasted adjustments expected to occur in 2013, as shown in my exhibit, as shown on company exhibit AEH-1 Schedule 5. I have also taken into account and have accepted the company's various data responses with regard to its North Dakota jurisdictional capital additions for 2013 and applied the company's allocation factor applicable to the North Dakota operations to compute a projected capital plant addition balance that is expected to be placed in service for 2013. Based upon this approach, my recommendation is a rate-based balance of $326,528,000 and a rate of return as recommended by witness Charles King, 7.138%, which calculates to a utility operating income of $23,307,000. The recommended rate-making components calculates to an overall revenue requirement decrease of approximately $10 million, as opposed to the company's revenue requirement increase of $14.884 million, as calculated by company witness Ms. Hoyer in her rebuttal testimony. I've relied on the testimony of Michael Majoris regarding the recommended depreciation expense to include in my revenue requirement calculation, and on testimony of Dr. Carl Pavlovic regarding the various jurisdictional allocators to the company's rate-based components and certain of the company's operating expenses.
Thank you, Mr. Mugrace. This witness is available for cross-examination.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Norrell. I believe Ms. Valley is going to cross-examine.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. McGrace, I'd like to begin with a discussion of the test year in this case.
Sure.
Do you agree that the company has a right to select a projected test year?
Yes.
And is
Ms. Valley, could you speak up just slightly or get the microphone a little closer?
Sure.
Thank you.
And is the company's right to select a projected test year provided by statute?
Yes.
And did the company, in fact, select a projected 2013 test year?
Yes, a forecasted projected test year, correct.
And did you say that that was reasonable to do so?
That was reasonable to do so.
Do you agree that a test year is intended to match 12 consecutive months of revenue with the same 12 consecutive months of expense?
Yes.
Now, I do have an exhibit here. It's already entered into the record. I'd like to direct to the parties or the commissioner's staff and everyone here to exhibit AEH-1, Schedule 11 of Ann Hoyer's testimony. I do have copies that I could just hand out. It doesn't need to be admitted as a separate exhibit, if that would be easy.
You said it's already been admitted, but for ease of reference, maybe if you want to do that, that's fine.
Thank you.
All right. I believe everyone has it. Thank you.
Mr. McGrace, what you have in front of you is Ann Hoyer's direct Schedule 11, which is a statement of operating revenues and expenses. And am I correct that you have replaced all of the test year operating expenses found on lines 7 through 14 of that schedule with a three-year average expense for the years 2010, 2011, and 2012?
I did.
And did you include 2013 test year expenses in your cost averaging approach?
No.
Now, moving up that table, did you replace operating revenues found on lines 1 through 5 of that schedule with a three-year average of operating revenues from 2010, 2011, and 2012?
I replaced the other operating revenue with a three-year average. I used the retail based on the company's most recent kilowatt-hour sales to calculate retail revenues. I didn't use a three-year average for the retail revenues.
You used your forecasted sales for the 2013.
Based on my historic three-year average of the kilowatt percent.
You the kilowatt hour.
Kilowatt
you
hours.
Based at a three-year average of a kilowatt hour rate on forecasted 2013.
Yes.
Thank you. And looking again at Ms. Hoyer's Schedule 11, line 17, did you replace 2013 amortizations with a three-year average?
For the amortizations, I made adjustments to the amortizations. I started with the 373, but I made adjustments going forward that was going with the amortizations that were going to occur in 2013.
And with respect to taxes on lines 18 to 22, did you replace taxes with the three-year historical average?
No, I've accepted the company's property taxes, which is higher than the $7 million that they have here. I think I used an $8.1 million property tax. I accepted that. The rest of them are just based, they're just components of the revenue requirement. You have to get an operating income to calculate the taxes, the federal, state income taxes, and payroll. It's just another process. You have to calculate the bottom line operating income, the net operating income, before you calculate these taxes. They're not three-year averages.
So they're calculated using a different method than you did to
Yes.
calculate expenses. Now, the table also doesn't include the three-year average adjustment that you made for fuel and purchased power. And if I could point you to page 33 of your direct testimony, you look at line 15, you state that the company recovers any changes in the fuel and purchased energy costs through the fuel cost rider. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
And were you aware that because fuel and purchased power costs flow through the fuel clause, that a matching amount of revenues is included in the test year to avoid recognizing those costs in base rates?
Say that again, please.
Were you aware that because fuel and purchase power costs flow through the fuel clause, that a matching amount of revenues is included in the test year to avoid recognizing those costs.
Yes.
And when you made your adjustment to fuel and purchase power in your schedule DM14, did you make an equal and offsetting reduction to revenues?
No, it did not.
I would like to refer now to the testimony of NSP witness, Mr. Stephen Foss. And I believe everybody has a copy of that. But for purposes of Mr. Grace, who likely does not have a copy of Mr. Foss's testimony handy, I did bring the exhibit out for him, if it's okay.
That's fine. Thank you.
Mr. McGrace, did you review the direct testimony of Mr. Stephen Foss on the 2013 level of cost for power production, transmission, and distribution?
I don't think I did.
Now, you have a copy of Mr. Foss's testimony in front of you for your convenience. What I would like you to go to is on page 15, table 4 of Mr. Foss's testimony. And you'll see there that table discusses which expenses have increased and by how much, and compares those costs to actual costs in 2011. Do you see that, Mr. McGrace?
Yes.
And am I correct that your testimony does not discuss those costs and the reasons for those cost increases in 2013 as compared to 2011 actuals?
I did not compare the costs in 2013 because they were budgeted. They weren't actual costs that I can get my hands around.
And when you look at table 14 and table 4 on page 15, does that table indicate that vegetation management has increased by $1 million?
It says that, but what has actually happened? And is that on company-wide basis or just specific to North Dakota? I'm not sure by reading this table whether it's an actual amount or whether it's specific to company-wide or it's allocated to the North Dakota jurisdictional operations.
Certainly, Mr. McGrace, this is for North Dakota.
I see that it's a $1 million, but that's a budgeted amount. I haven't seen anything that has been actual over the 2013 test year.
So you did not look at the company's anticipated expenses and the reasons for those expenses in 2013?
I did. I looked at them, but I couldn't accept them because I don't have any reliability on what has actually happened in 2013. Since the company doesn't provide any interim or updated financial statements, it's hard to test what the company has budgeted versus what the company has realized. It's been almost nine months into the test year, and it's taxing to me just to find out how to match the budget which the company has proposed to its actual.
And Mr. McGrace, could you point to me where in your testimony you challenged the company's budgeting process?
I think on page 34. I recommend a 3-year average for setting the fuel and purchase costs because the costs are evident, historic in nature, and are documented. And as stated in the cost assignment and allocation manuals, these allocations are jurisdictional. These jurisdictional costs are an annual process. So they change from year to year. So the rate base related costs, rate base investments, they change as well. So I didn't challenge the manual, but I always like to know what the actual costs are. I see the allocations, and I accept some of the allocations, but it's tough and it's difficult for me to see what has been projected as to what has actually happened.
But you, Mr. McGrace, my question was where in your testimony you challenged the company's budgeting process for calculating these.
I didn't challenge the budget. I didn't challenge the process. I just challenged that they change from year to year.
Thank you, Mr. McGrace. And going back to Mr. Foss's testimony, just as looking at the overall proposal, on page 14, line 16, he discusses a $650,000 increase for distribution O&M. And did you challenge that level of increase in your testimony?
again, I didn't challenge it, but I would like to know what the actual costs are in 2013 compared to what has been budgeted at the amount of $650,000.
And do you agree that the table on four on page 15 identifies capital support, vegetation management, damage prevention, materials, and a reduction for other expenses?
I see those numbers, yes.
Thank you, Mr. McGrace. And if I could point you then to page 23, line 3 of Mr. Foss's testimony. Mr. Foss explains that the increase in transmission O&M for 2013 over 2011 actuals is $4.8 million. And did you increase the 2013 budget for transmission expenses in your analysis?
4.8 or 41.8?
It's 4.8. I apologize if I misspoke.
I see 41.8. On table 5, page 20.
No, 23, line 3.
Oh, page 23, line 3.
Yes.
Okay. I see that, but like I said, if the company can provide me actual data, then I can test whether the $4.8 million that has been budgeted over the 2011 actual expenses, then I can compare what the company has budgeted to what has been actually expensed.
And did you state that as a reason in your testimony?
No, I didn't.
Thank you, Mr. McGrace. Now, Mr. McGrace, you had mentioned one-time amortizations in your opening statement. And does the company propose to amortize one-time expenses over 3 years?
Yes.
And do you accept using a three-year amortization?
Yes, I do. Okay.
And did the company take the test year expense and divide it by three?
Yes.
And is
the outstanding balance and divided it by three?
Yes. Thank you for that clarification. Is the company's assumption that it would receive one-third of the cost in year one through interim rates and a second third of the cost in the first year final rates are in effect?
No, I don't see it like that.
Well, Mr. McGrace, if the company is proposing to amortize the costs over 3 years, would you agree that one-third of the cost would be recovered in each of those 3 years?
It depends on the amortization, because some of these amortizations have already been approved by the commission to recover those costs in rates. So they have a set annual cost that they're already allowed to recover. So I would like to know if they're still recovering those costs now. And if they are, then they are amortizing those costs in 2013. So the new rates or the new change in the amortization would be 2014, not 2013.
Mr. McGrace, do you understand that the company currently has interim rates in effect?
Yes, they do.
And do you agree that if final rates set in this proceeding are less than interim rates, that they will be set on the final revenue requirement in any to the extent that final rates are less than interim rates, refunds will go to be paid to ratepayers?
Yes.
And do you agree that if a one-third cost is not included in final rates, that those costs will be then included in that refund obligation to ratepayers?
I don't think that's the answer. I don't think that's the reason, because in like the prior rate case expenses, the company has already set in place by the commission a level of amortization they're allowed to recover in rates. So barring any rate increase, the company can still recover those costs under its old rate structure. I'm just extending it because I'm adding an extra year of amortization, because the company is already recovering those costs from the last rate structure, the last rate order. So those costs should be reduced by a third, and then that balance should be out by 3 years.
And Mr. McGrace, it's my understanding you haven't disagreed with the amount of the...
No, I did not disagree with the amount.
Amortized.
I accept the amount. That's the balance of the amount.
But do you agree if you disallow that one-third of the costs in the first year rates are in effect, you would reduce that recovery by a third?
No, I disagree with that.
Mr. McGrace, Did the company calculate its 2013 test year plant in service by averaging the 2012 end of year balance with the 2013 end of year balance?
They started with a 2011 average balance, and then they gave us the 2012 annual reports. Then they used a 2013 forecasted average balance.
Would you agree that the purpose of averaging the beginning and ending plant and service balances is to provide an average 2013 rate base?
I agree with that.
Now, did you calculate the 2013 test year plant in service by taking the plant in service as reported in the 2012 earnings report and add the 2013 plant additions?
I took the 2012 average balance in the earnings report, and I applied the company's proposed capital additions with the company's 5.1121 allocation factor applicable to North Dakota to get a total gross capital additions expected to be placed in service in 2013.
Now, do you agree with your starting place is the reported plant in service in the 2012 earnings report that's the average rate base for 2012 and not the end of year 2012 rate base?
In the earnings report from the earnings report provided by the Public Service Commission, it says average rate base plant in service $780,660,000. That's my starting point, and that's the average.
That is the average. So you agree it's not the end of year 2012 rate base.
I don't see an end of year balance here, so I didn't use that.
So if your starting place is the average 2012 plant in service, do you agree that your proposal has the effect of removing 50% of the plant additions made in 2012 from plant in service?
I don't see the information in front of me to make a determination on that. I used what the company used, average balance. In this earnings report, I don't see an end-of-year balance. I see an average balance.
Do you know what the revenue requirement effect of your plant and service recommendations is?
Actually, I've accepted almost all of the company's utility plant and service, borrowing $10 million of it. In my spreadsheets, I think I have $859 million of plant and service, and the company's proposing $869. That's only a $10 million difference.
In the plant and service, but that's not the revenue requirement.
It's just the plant and service, correct.
Thank you. And I just have one additional question here. If I could point you to page 25 of your revised testimony. And you state on lines 10 through 18 that you used the increase in sales in the first quarter 2013 over the first quarter 2012 to support an increase in the company's sales figures of 1.54%.
Correct.
Did you apply this increase to the company's 2013 forecast?
No, I did not.
And what number did you apply that to?
I applied this number by the company's public notice, which shows 2.270721 megawatt sales. That's what they publicly noticed that's going to be in effect or expected in 2013. So I used the 2013 number, but I looked at some of the data requests, and it seems like some of the megawatts are increasing more than what the company has proposed it to increase. But I used the 1.5 because I used the first quarter 2012 over the first quarter 2013, that 1.54%, I used that as an increase over the company's increase over the 2013 projected sales.
So you applied a 1.54% increase to the company's sales forecast for 2013?
Yes.
And did the company update its forecast in July 23 to represent a 2% increase over 2012 actual sales?
You can show me where that is. I'd be happy to look at it.
It is in Ann Hoyer's rebuttal on page 24. I'm not sure if we could pull that for you.
I don't have Ms. Hoyer's rebuttal.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, in terms of how you presented the sales forecast, is it correct then to say that you did not back out the company's projected increase in sales over 2012 from your projected increase in sales for 2012?
I did not back that out.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McGrace. No further questions at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Valley. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle.
Okay, I'm just going to say right up front that I'm probably not going to get these correct. We would like, though, some additional information on your basis for using the three-year average. And in doing that, I am trying to sort out if every line, okay, you're not applying the three-year average to every line item, correct? I mean, some you're saying don't deserve a three-year average.
I'm not applying them to any of the rate base components, okay. And I'm not applying them to the retail revenue, but from basically the operating expenses and the other operating revenues, because they fluctuate from year to year.
Okay, so basically if we wanted to oversimplify perhaps or simplify, we would say it's those operating line items that you apply the three-year average to. Okay. Can you tell us then a little bit more about your reasoning for doing that?
Sure. Usually when a company projects forecasted data in 2013, they usually supplement that with up-to-date information. So every quarter, every month, every 6 months, they provide actual data and they supplement or replace the actual the forecasted data to actual data. So you can test whether the actual data is in line with what has been projected. In this case, one of my data requests says, please provide updated reports on a monthly basis so we can test and track that data. The company, unfortunately, doesn't do it on the jurisdictional basis. They do it on a company-wide basis. So it's difficult to me that the reliability is not there. If the company can produce actual data, especially during a rate case proceeding, it would make my life a lot easier.
And we saw that in one of the exhibits yesterday, correct? That the answer was it's overly burdensome.
I have to start someplace, so I can't start with projections because I don't know what the end result's going to be. I got to start with something that's concrete and historic in nature. And people may think that it's a mixed match of test year components, but it's basically not. You have to start someplace. And where do you start? The annual reports.
Okay. Well, I don't want to pin you down here. If you don't have an opinion or an answer for this, I understand. But if you had that actual data up to this point, as you said, we're almost at 9 months. And let's assume that it convinced you that the forecast was accurate as you would want, as you would feel comfortable with. Would you abandon the three-year average recommendation because 9 months of proving it correct?
It would give me a different approach to the test year, and I would accept the company's projections because I see from convincing reliable data that their projections are accurate.
Okay, then I have one further question on that. If you recall from yesterday, there was a bit of discussion about the statute that allows them to file a projected test year and the fact that it's supposed to be accompanied with the budgeted versus actual for some number of years before that, not one, but something more than one. If, let's say that this case had come in with budgeted and actual North Dakota data for 2012, 2010, and 2011, but no updates for 2013. That stays as it is because they don't do it or something. Would those, and let's say those comparisons showed fairly good accuracy in the budgeting, how would that affect your analysis?
It would give me more of a comfort level to accept their projections because I could see that 3 years they've been on target. But I would like to see the actuals also because things change during the years. I mean, sometimes you have a good set of revenues going up, but then they drop. I mean, it's always good to have actual as most recent data as appropriate.
I think that's all this time anyway. Thank you.
All right, thank you. This time we'll go to the commission for questioning. Commissioner Fedorchik?
Yes, Mr. Mugrace, I see by your resume that you have worked on a commission, the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities.
Yes.
When you were working on that commission and doing rate cases, what was your experience in terms of the use of test years and how companies tested their assumptions?
There's two-pronged approach. The company can use a fully historical test year. So let's say in this case they come in November 2012. They can use a 2012 test year, which will be fully historical 2 months after the fact, or a post-test year adjustment, which means they can go about 6 months beyond the historical test year. But in order to get that, those plant and service balances and all the other rate-making components in service, they have to provide monthly updates to track what they're projecting as to what's actually happening, balance sheet and income statements. And before the commission makes a determination on rates, the post-test year plant, the post-test year period must be fully historical. That's how New Jersey does it. But they have to constantly update their projections.
Okay.
On a usually it's on a month-to-month basis, but we do accept quarterly basis, too, for the smaller companies.
Do you feel that that it's feasible with how this company operates to incorporate some of those methods into testing their test year assumptions?
I think if the company could at least during rate case proceedings provide some type of update to track the projections, balance sheet or income statements, even if it's quarterly, at least we know we have a comfort level to show what the company has projected to what the company has actually incurred. I'm all for a future forecast, the full year forecast, but it's got to be backed up by data,
mm-hmm.
convincing and reliable data.
If I'm following correctly the discussion here, you had yesterday it sort of sounded like the company was suggesting that you were using the three-year average when it was convenient and not when it wasn't convenient. But what you said today made me seem like you had a more systematic way of applying the three-year average.
I used the three-year average when I didn't have any data that I can actually test. So I had to use something. But I used the company's rate base. I gave them all the rate base mm-hmm. components. I adjusted revenues. I believe revenues are going up, but the cost per kilowatt is going down. Other operating revenues, they fluctuate from year to year. And the main focus of the three-year average is the expenses.
Yep.
How do you track something that's projected? You have to show something that's in line with what they're projecting.
Okay. Does the company, in their calculations, your understanding of their calculations, do they take into account increased sales in 2013?
I think they do. I think in Ann Hoyer's testimony, they used a kilowatt hour that's less than $2.27 million. They used something less than that, and they applied a 2% factor in their 2013. So I think in their public notice, it's 2.27 million kilowatts that they use in 2013, projected.
Okay,
that's
and is
what
that
gets them their $182 million, 724 retail revenue increase, retail revenue level.
And how does that track to what you're seeing is happening in reality?
If you go to data request 5025, which gives you annualized 5 months of usage, that's actual data. For the first 5 months, I see 1,015,000 kilowatts, and the revenues is 79,366,000 for 5 months. And I know that includes the interim rate increase in there too. If you annualize that out, they come up with $192,878,000. In total revenues, but you got to back out the interim rate that they've recovered or they've been allowed to recover from February 16th to the end of the test year, which is about $12.8 million. So that gives me an interim or not interim, an annual level of revenues of about $180 million if you project it out. They're forecasting $182,724,000, which is close, and I've recommended $177,000, so it's close also.
Okay. So they aren't real off on the...
They're not real up, but if we had this kind of data for the expenses and the plant and service, we can track it evenly across everything.
Yep. Okay. How do they test their projections?
They just have this budget forecast. It's company-wide, and then they have the allocations, and then they allocate the rate base, revenues, and O&M expenses across their band of jurisdictional operations. Minnesota, I think, is 87%. North Dakota is 6%, and I think South Dakota is 6-point-something%. It adds up to 100%. That's how they allocate, and I'm okay with their allocations, how they process it, but my concern and my hookup is I need actual data just to make sure it's convincing and reliable to me.
Your methodology, in your estimation, would be more precise, or you're looking for something that's more precise.
Yeah, I've done the best I can with what I have in front of me, but okay. Like I said, the expenses are taxing because expenses change from year to year. And it would be nice to see what their January forecast is, the January budget is, mm-hmm. February forecast, February budget. It would be nice to track that. And then you can look at the variances. If they're small, you can project out for the whole year.
Okay. And by your calculations, the company has too much revenue.
Based on what I have for 5 months, it looks like the company is accumulating more revenue than they projected. But like I said, it's only been 5 months. I haven't seen any other updates, like a 6-month or almost 9-month. That could change too.
Okay, but that you have a your calculations in the whole matter come out with a nearly $10 million revenue excess, right?
Well, that 192 includes the interim increase. So you have to back that out. So it's like about $12.8 million you got to back out. So the actual, on an annual basis, is about $180 million, which is pretty close to 182. It's pretty close.
Let me just direct you to page 5 of your testimony, your direct testimony.
Yes.
In point number 6, the recommended rate-making components as indicated above calculates to an overall revenue requirement decrease
of
$9.9 million. So they basically need to be refunding, correct?
Based on my numbers,
based
correct.
On your numbers. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Dan, for your testimony. So did you work for Commissioners Butler and Gene Fox out there?
Yes, for many, many, many years.
You know, Fred never said New Jersey. He always said Jersey, just for the record. You agree with the Brookings and the Bemidji CapEx lines costs?
I've accepted all the company's adjustments to their 2013 test year.
Was there anything that granted you accepted them in the end, was there anything that you had to go back and double-check at, particularly the Brookings line that –
The Brookings, I know, is not going to be in service until 2015, but I've accepted that those costs are going to be incurred in 2013 because there's some interconnection in between one terminal and the other. So I've accepted that because it is a critical piece in the whole puzzle.
All right, great. And then to go a different way back to your prepared testimony, there's some discussion you have about advertising expenses. You're recommending to not include the I think it's $191,000.
Where is, can you tell me?
Well, let's see if I can find it again. It's about page 60. You talk about advertising, page 58. The company is
advertising.
The company has proposed a decreasing in $191,000. Just wanted to hear some more of your thoughts about their advertising expenses.
It's a decrease in advertising expense, so I'm accepting their decrease in the advertising expense. I think this is company-wide, and they allocate a piece of that to North Dakota. $48,000 of that relates to customer programs, and the other $143,000 is brand imaging. So they reduced all that out.
And you, of course, agree with that.
Yeah, because brand imaging and sponsorship does not provide any kind of service to customers. It actually promotes the company for its corporate image. But they took that out, and I accept that.
Okay, then the chamber dues going on down the road, you don't think that they should be paying chamber dues?
Chamber of Commerce dues, it all depends. I think they're lobbying in nature. And it, again, it doesn't provide any benefit to the customer. It provides a benefit to the corporation.
Okay. Charitable donations, specifics on page 61, you laid out several different groups that receive donations, and you don't think that's necessarily appropriate either?
I don't think charitable donations should be included at all for rate-making purposes. It does nothing to the customer. If we took charitable donations out, the company would still be receiving safe and reliable service. It's just something that the company likes to do to promote their corporate image and their social responsibility. But social responsibility is not their regulatory compact. Safe, adequate, and reliable service is their regulatory compact.
And that was $157,000?
That was half of it. They removed half of it, but they wanted to recover the other half.
Okay. And a couple more down this line of discussion. Aircraft expenses, you don't think that they're – you think it's okay, but you'd recommend a cap of $104,000, I think it was?
It looks like their aircraft or the aviation usage is cheaper than the commercial flights, and they've already recovered. They're only using one plane rather than two planes, so they're cutting it in half. But I would like to track it, and just in case that those commercial flights are cheaper than the aviation, maybe down the road there should be some adjustment to that.
Okay.
But it's less than what – I agree it's less than what the commercial airlines are offering as far as flight.
And then the last one, incentive comp, which we've talked quite a bit about, so I don't want to open up that whole discussion again. But the I did think it was unique this morning. We talked about the rate case from 2007, and that's when this commission, which that was my first rate case, went from 25 to 15. And so this is kind of trying to bring it back up the other way. And you basically say no need for incentive comp at all.
If the company wants to provide incentive comp to its customers, they could do it on the shareholder side. But ratepayers should not be, allowed to recover those costs and rates. They have an obligation to provide safe, adequate, and proper service. To provide even more of an incentive to provide service, the shareholders can pay for it.
Fair enough. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Chrisman.
How common or uncommon is it for regulatory bodies to allow either economic development or charitable donations to be built into the costs?
I know in New Jersey that we don't allow it at all since 1999.
Either one.
I think it went to the Supreme Court, and the ratepayer advocate in that state won it. I don't know. I think in New York there are some levels of charitable contributions and donations and economics embedded into the costs, but that's how New York does its regulatory rate making. I know in New Jersey we don't allow it at all. It depends on the commission.
Okay.
And it varies from commission to commission.
Okay. I have no other questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Norrell, back to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I do have a point of clarification. I'm not sure. I can't ask Mr. McGrace to testify to Mr. Foss's testimony, but I do have a question for NSP, and I don't know how to put this forward, but just the testimony that was put forth by Mr. Foss relates to the NSPM expenses, and I'm wondering if that, to me, that would seem to indicate system-wide. I'm wondering if we could get some clarification from NSP on that.
Thank you. Certainly distribution is jurisdictional specific. The transmission expense, I will ask Ms. Hoyer one moment. And the transmission was provided as a company-wide figure.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. McGrace, I was just wondering, when did the company provide you with 2012 data. What did you look at for that? When did you receive it?
I think it was received in their updates in May or June. It was probably in their one of the data requests. They provided the annual reports for 2012 and their adjustments from their projected test year. There was some adjustments to Sherco, Sherco incentive compensation, Black Dog removal, Monticello upright. They took pieces of that out. They readjusted their depreciation schedules or their studies. They took certain pieces out. I think there were like six of them.
That was a earnings report, you said?
It was just off of their proposed revenue requirement increase. It wasn't really a balance sheet or income statement. It was just like a summary of their updates to their forecasted data.
Did the company furnish the end-of-year 2012 plant and service balance prior to its rebuttal testing?
I did not see that in any of my documentation. All I see was average plant and service.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Norrell. Ms. Valley?
Thank you. Just a few more questions, Mr. McGrace. Did you review Ms. Hoyer's direct and rebuttal testimony?
Yes, I did.
And did you review tables 1 and 2 on pages 11 and 12 of her direct testimony, which shows actual versus budget O&M expenses for years 2007 through 2011?
I'm sure I did, but if you could refresh my memory and provide me something, I'd be happy to look at it.
Your Honor, I could show Mr. McGrace my copies here if that would help him.
Yes, that would be fine.
What pages are those?
Could you identify the page numbers again, please?
Pages 11 and 12.
Of which testimony?
Of the direct.
Hoyer?
Direct.
Thank you.
So, Mr. McGrace, do you agree that the company provided historical data of actual versus budget?
Yes, they did on a company-wide basis, yes.
Thank you.
From 2007 to 2011.
Thank you, Your Honor. No further questions.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
We have no questions.
I'll go back then to the commissioners for any follow-up. Commissioner Fedorchik?
One second, please. Oh, no, I do not have any more questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Kalk?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. Commissioner Christman? All right. Mr. Norrell, do you have any further questions?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
I think we've made it around the room then. That will comprise your testimony, and thank you, Mr. McGrace. And I believe, Mr. Norrell, you have one final witness.
That is correct, Your Honor. Would the court, could we entertain just a 5-minute break to get everything sorted?
Yes. We'll take 10 minutes.
You want this one too?